This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. One of the many bills working through the State House right now is about pregnant workers in Indiana. It guarantees that if a pregnant woman asks their employer for accommodations, the employer has to respond and the worker can't be retaliated against. Some say this is one step towards needed protection that guarantee accommodations, something a number of other states have. Some say it's nothing more than the appearance of progress. And some in the business community say more regulations around pregnant workers would put an unfair burden on small companies and could conflict with federal rules. With us now is Representative Karen Engelman, the Republican state representative behind the new bill on pregnant workers. Representative Engelman, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with this bill that is being proposed. Can you explain what it would do if it passes?
It would allow an employee that is pregnant to ask their employer for an accommodation. It requires that the employer respond in a timely manner, and it keeps the employer from retaliating against, terminating, or disciplining an employee for either requesting or receiving an accommodation. I think it's real important that the employee not be afraid to ask, and it's also important that the employer has to let them know. So, and especially in a timely manner with pregnancy, that's, you know, there's a certain time period there that they would have to let them know.
Right, right. Like not when they've had the baby and now they're like, okay, we'll give you a response.
Right, yeah.
And what are the kinds of accommodations that people would generally ask for? I'm just curious. I mean, would it be like a better chair? Would it be time off to go to doctor's appointments?
Extra restroom breaks. That's when you're pregnant, that's really something that's you have to go to the bathroom more. You have to stay hydrated. That's very important. Sometimes you have to even be allowed to eat small amounts of food just to keep your body in good shape. But it could also be a chair. It could be that you can't lift 50-pound boxes all day. There are so many different kind of companies and so many different types of accommodations that could be requested. I just couldn't see how we could do a bill that would accommodate the pregnant worker, but also not require the employer encumber them with too strict of regulations. So,
I mean, those sound like reasonable asks. It's interesting to think that anybody would be opposed to something like that. You've worked on similar bills before about pregnant worker accommodations. Were those bills different than this one?
Yes. In 2019, I did a bill. In 2020, I did the same bill. And Senator Alting also did the bill in the Senate. And for 2 years, the bill that I did didn't move. So I decided to try another approach and see if I could do something. I want to do something to help the pregnant workers.
Mm-hmm. Have you heard from a lot of constituents that are asking for these types of, laws to be on their side?
Yes, I have. And actually, when Kentucky passed their bill, I worked with their chamber. That they helped me with my first bill in 2019. And I've had people come up here to the State House asking for help, and they have contacted me personally. So I know this is very important, and a woman shouldn't have to decide between her supporting her family and having a healthy pregnancy. And a lot of women are now head of household, or maybe they're the main breadwinner for the family.
Mm-hmm. And have you heard from any business owners or organizations that are opposed to this? I mean, what would their reasoning be aside from if it's something that's going to cost them a lot of money?
I haven't heard from business owners against it. I think they realize that we're just trying to hit a good place for both the employer and the employee.
Mm-hmm. And just to clarify, so this bill, if a woman asked for accommodations, the employer has to respond in a reasonable amount of time. In the past, they weren't required to do that?
No, there was nothing in the law that said they had to. And I do think that some women were afraid to ask because they didn't want to lose their job or have some kind of problem with their job.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So why is this an issue that you've decided to, you know, take on for multiple sessions now? Why do you think it's important?
Well, I have children and I worked when I had children. And honestly, I would have been afraid to ask at some of my jobs just because I liked the job. I needed it. I needed the work. And I can identify with those ladies that are now pregnant. I have a great grandchild now, so that's I'm past that. But I still worry about the ladies that are in that time of their life. So.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you have questions or comments for our show today, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. Or you can send us a high-quality voice message with our smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. It's free and easy to use. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. So, Representative, do you consider your bill to be sort of a stepping stone to possibly more regulations or guidelines for pregnant workers, or is this, you think, something that is the most that can be done at this point?
I think it's the most that can be done this year, but it is definitely a stepping stone, and I would hope that we will work together to try to come up with some legislation that would not hurt either side and would be helpful to both, because I know that a lot of our women are very valuable employees, and the company mm-hmm. want to lose them.
Mm-hmm. And what about, you know, there are some folks who are saying they're not in favor of this bill because they don't think it goes far enough, and that if it gets passed, then it's just going to kind of give employers, you know, they can just check it off that, okay, we handled this.
Well, I don't see that as being the case. We come back here every year and work to further it, our legislation. And I think that will be the case in this bill also. But I wanted to make sure that we had something that we could pass that would help them. And I do feel like this will.
Mm-hmm. And have you seen changes? You know, you mentioned that you're a mother yourself from when you were raising your children to now. Do you think there are better protections for pregnant women?
I think there are because I don't even want to go back to how long ago it was when I had my children. But I think that people have there's a lot more women in the workplace. And I do think they have come a long ways with this. But I do think we have to go farther.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know we touched on this a little bit earlier, but I just want to make sure I'm understanding, you know, is there any validity to the concerns that people have that more regulations could put a burden on companies, especially smaller companies that don't have a lot of resources if, you know, they have a lot of pregnant employees?
Right. I think that it could put a burden on, we don't want to put a burden on, we want to make sure we have jobs for the employees to even work. To come to work to at. And so we don't want to overburden them with legislation, but we also want to protect the women also.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you're hopeful, I think, for this bill to pass. Have you had any indication that this is going to go through?
I'm hoping so. I believe it's on third reading today. I saw that it was on second yesterday. So I'm sure it'll be coming up for third reading.
And there are other states that have passed some strict regulations with pregnant workers' rights, red and blue states. Is this a partisan issue in Indiana, or is it also bipartisan like other states?
Well, I think that both parties want to help our pregnant women. I think it is a bipartisan thing that we do want to help them.
Mm-hmm. And when you look at other states, do you feel that Indiana is like on the right track or could more be done?
I think we're on the right track, and I think we'll continue to work on this.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, what's next in terms of this bill? You mentioned that it's up for a third reading. I guess like if it passes, what can we expect to see?
If it passes in the Senate, it'll go to the governor for signature.
And it becomes law as of?
Effective date's July 1 of 2021.
Okay, sure, so that's pretty soon.
Use, but that's it.
Yeah, so that's pretty soon. Yes. And I guess maybe a small victory for pregnant women.
Right, I think so.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Karen Engelman is a Republican state representative for District 70 in Indiana. We're learning about a bill at the State House that requires employers to respond when a pregnant worker asks for accommodations. Up next, we'll hear from someone who doesn't think it goes far enough. If you have questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All In Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. We're talking today about a bill at the Indiana State House that would mean employers have to respond to requests for accommodations by a pregnant employee. But it doesn't guarantee that a pregnant woman's boss will actually provide anything, which is a protection a number of other states have in place. With us, we have Deborah Whitus, professor of law at the Indiana University Moorer School of Law, and Samantha Kern, one of the individuals who testified against House Bill 1309. Samantha, I'd like to start with you. If you could tell us, you know, what is it that compelled you to get involved in this and to testify against this bill?
Thank you. So I got involved. Actually, I had received a text survey one night in February that just asked me if I had ever experienced any issues with pregnancy accommodation in the workplace. I was bored and I filled out the text survey, and upon filling it out, completing it, I had a bit of reflection and realized that the experience that I had in the workplace was truly the epitome of wrong. And it got me pretty fired up. So I joined up with a community organization called Hoosier Action. And they've kind of helped put me where I need to be as far as testifying. And, you know, at this point, I'm no longer employed by that facility. So I'm in a good position to discuss this, whereas there's plenty of other women who are still employed at the very places that they're not receiving their accommodations. And it's pretty hard to speak out when you're still fearful for your job and retaliation. So I'm just kind of in that position where I can put myself out there on behalf of women who can't.
Would you mind telling us a little bit about, you know, what it was that you experienced? I think it just helps people to put into perspective what it means for pregnant women who are, you know, unable to get the accommodations that they need.
Sure. So several years ago, I worked at a local Catholic hospital here in the Indianapolis area. I was pregnant, and I discovered while I was working with one of my patients that I was bleeding. So having had a previous history of miscarriages, I knew right away this was not something to mess around with. I called my OBGYN, who at that point told me I needed to go ahead and leave my shift, take an elevator ride upstairs to labor and delivery, and seek some medical treatment. You know, there was concern that I was miscarrying this pregnancy, and we wanted to try to stop the miscarriage. So I reached out to my immediate supervisor, told her the situation, told her about my doctor's recommendation, and she told me that I was not allowed to leave my shift unless I found someone to cover my shift for me, and I also needed to wait for them to show up. So then I began the process of trying to find someone to replace me. I worked in nuclear medicine, which is a really specialized field. There's not a big pool of us to choose from. So I got pretty lucky that someone was able to come in and relieve me. But like I said, it took 2 hours. And by the time that I was doing this, I also heard from 2 superiors above her who said also that I had to stay and find someone to cover my shift for me. So I, you know, asked for my accommodation in a timely fashion. I received a response in a timely fashion, but unfortunately the response was not helpful for myself or my baby. And I did wind up miscarrying and losing that child. So that's kind of the abbreviated version. But yeah, that's that's why I'm here today to talk about it, because I know that I'm not the only woman that goes through this. And I just want to be able to make things better. You know, 1309 hasn't been enough. It would not have helped my pregnancy, you know, 4 years ago. Nothing would have changed with 1309. There's nothing in 1309 that would have said, yes, she can leave. She has a medical necessity and needs to get out of here.
Well, I'm really sorry you had to go through with that situation and experience that. And I really appreciate you sharing that with us. I'm sure it's very difficult to have to keep rehashing some of those traumatic experiences. Deborah, when you hear stories like this, is this common that you're hearing from women who are facing difficulties being pregnant and working?
Unfortunately, yes, it is common. And the, you know, I would say Samantha's a little unusual in that she was comfortable right away saying, this is an emergency and I need help, because sometimes people, you know, are afraid to ask. And this, and I think they continue to be afraid of to ask, even if this bill were to pass, because what's the point of putting yourself on the line if you don't expect your employer to grant the request anyway, and if there's no reason to think they will? So it can be crisis situations like Samantha's, or it can be a checkup and, you know, a doctor or a nurse says, avoid heavy lifting, and you just occasionally need to lift a heavy box and you just need someone to help, or you need to be able to carry a water bottle or sit on a stool rather than stand at a cash register. I mean, these are not big asks. Yes, some employers do it routinely, but unfortunately, a lot of employers do not. And particularly kind of low wage workers who tend to be in really heavily regulated work environments where you need permission to do anything, to go to the bathroom, to take a break, to eat a snack. They have to ask for all of that. And they often just don't get the support that you need to keep healthy and safe during a pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. And I can imagine it gets to the point of feeling demoralizing when it's like every 5 seconds you have to ask permission for something. Well, what about with state laws that exist right now? Is there anything that deals with this ahead of this bill? Was there anything else in place?
Well, so there's sort of two parts to your question. So there's federal law that applies, you know, anywhere in the country, and then there's other states. And so I'll just kind of answer both parts of that, if that's okay. So
yeah.
Federal law, which of course applies in Indiana, like anywhere else in the U.S., is basically a sort of confusing patchwork at this point. So there's no explicit requirement that pregnancy receive accommodations. But what there is disability law, which does require reasonable accommodations, unless it would be an undue hardship on the business. And the thing there is that pregnancy itself is not considered a disability, but pregnancy complications can be. So if you understand that you have some sort of complication with your pregnancy and that could count as a disability, then you can go to your boss and say, it's not just that I'm pregnant, it's also that I have something that is recognized as a disability, and so you need to accommodate me. The other law, federal law, that can apply is the sex discrimination law, which also prohibits pregnancy discrimination and which says that pregnant employees have to be treated the same as other employees with similar limitations. And so that law has been interpreted to say, well, if you have an employer who's routinely providing accommodations for other kinds of health conditions, they should be required to provide the same level of support to pregnant employees, or at least have some justification for it that's beyond just it would cost a little bit more or it would be a little bit inconvenient. So there's kind of this confusing standard where nothing is direct, but sometimes pregnancy accommodations are required. The problem is employers don't understand that because it's confusing and they both kind of have multiple steps, and employees don't understand it. So what 30 other states have passed, and this includes Kentucky, like we heard about from Representative Engelman, Tennessee, West Virginia. I mean, so these are states that, you know, are typically considered, quote, red states. But what they've passed is just a simple standard that says, employers, you have to provide a reasonable accommodation for pregnancy unless it would be an undue hardship on you to do that, which is the exact same standard that we have in disability law. So it sort of clears up this whole confusion and just says, here's a simple rule. Employers can understand it. Employees can understand it. And it feels fair because it's providing the same kind of support that we provide to other health conditions that are disabilities, recognizing that pregnancy is not a disability. It's something to celebrate. But sometimes it does cause limitations that are similar to other kinds of health conditions where you need to take steps to protect your health.
So I'm just trying to digest all of this. So you're saying that currently, if you have a disability, you have more protections than if you're pregnant. Is that
accurate? That is correct. Yes. If you have a disability, you have more protections than if you're pregnant. If you have a disability, you can go to your boss and say, I need a reasonable accommodation. And they need to provide it. And, you know, it's not like the idea is that you sit down with your boss and you talk about what will work. Like, I have these ideas and they can say, oh, well, that's fine. Or here's a different solution. So it's supposed to be a kind of interactive process where you work together to find something that will work. And what the pregnancy accommodation bills that other states have passed is just say, let's have that same conversation here. But with the expectation that, yeah, you're going to provide an accommodation, you're going to figure out what to do to help in this situation.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious how the narrative can change to a place where women can feel comfortable. I'm just thinking of my own experiences. I had my kids in Illinois, but, you know, I remember, you know, you're working, you're pregnant, and you don't want to say anything. You don't want to rock the boat. You know, you might be exhausted and need a little bit of a break, but you don't want to go there. You got to show that you can do it all. Which brings me to you, Samantha. I mean, how were you able to get through this?
Well, you know, in the moment, it was very time sensitive. So I know I'm bleeding. I know I have an emergency, but I feel like my hands are tied. So, you know, I was put in that position. Do I want to keep my job? Or, you know, do I want to run upstairs and save this pregnancy? So, you know, at the time, I'm trying to get my replacement in. I'm trying to get a hold of my husband. You know, I'm trying to, you know, just take care of my patient. I still had a patient on my hands at that moment. So, you know, you're trying to balance all of that. And there's really not a whole lot of time to think about the big picture and, you know, I should just leave and roll the dice. Like, you know, when you're in the moment, you're not necessarily thinking about, you know, like the final outcome or, you know, what are my legal options? Should I be, you know, speaking to someone beyond the two supervisors that I've already spoken to? You know, I mean, it's, at the time, I remember crying. I remember just feeling completely helpless. And so, you know, I mean, when you ask, how do you get through it? That's a really tricky question because you just do what you have to do in the moment.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And do you feel that now with sort of getting involved with pushing for better laws, is that sort of a way to find some closure somewhat?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely feel as if the Band-Aid has been ripped off a bit. But as I've gone to do these interviews and, you know, I testified at the first Senate hearing, and as I'm in the room with people that really don't have their finger on the pulse, it fuels me to stay involved with this. I mean, at this point, my baby-making days are over. I'm done. I don't want more children. I'm self-employed. This has nothing to do about, you know, me taking on my former employer. This is just about trying to ensure that things are better for the next generation. And so that's really what has been, you know, keeping me going. And I don't know that it necessarily provides any sort of emotional healing necessarily. I don't know if I have time for emotional healing. But, you know, being in a room with legislators who are in their 60s, possibly a little bit out of touch with the common person and the common person's struggle in the workplace. You know, I mean, I looked up the legislators that I spoke in front of. One of them owns an industrial oil company. You know, one of them owns a surveying company. One owns a plumber company. So you have all these people who are in these male-dominated industries, and they're trying to say, oh, I think that pregnancy law is great for women. I would never treat my employee this way. But the reality is they're out of touch. And so, you know, I'm just using this moment to, like I said, speak for women who aren't able to do it for themselves right now and haven't, you know, haven't had that time.
Mm-hmm. And Deborah, are these lawmakers out of touch?
Well, I would say the makeup of the committee that heard this bill did not include a lot of people that ever would have been pregnant because it was almost all men. So, and yes, I think most of them were older as well. I think in some sense, one of the most moving moments of the hearing was one of the senators, one senator just said, oh, I own a business and we always do this. And then another senator said, yes, I do too. And in my business, I would. But my daughter worked for a business that you would never have expected to deny an accommodation. And they did. It was a food pantry and she needed help lifting heavy boxes and they were unwilling to do it. And so, you know, I think really the key thing is, like, have you gone through someone that you know, someone that you love who has had this experience? Because once you realize that that can happen, I do think it transforms the way you think about it. But the lived experience of the senators, yes, fewer of them are going to have been in that situation.
Mm-hmm. I think it sounds like similar to sort of any kind of concept. In order for people to get on board and understand, they sort of have to be in the person's shoes, so to speak. Samantha, you mentioned that you testified at the State House. Did you feel like your testimony had an impact?
Oh, I wish it had. No, I don't follow politics terribly closely. I think it may have had an impact. I do. It's obviously not given me the absolute result that I want. But it maybe got us a little bit closer. It at least provoked a discussion. And I think that that's really important that this discussion continues, even if we don't get the outcome that we want on 1309. People are talking about it. It's getting a lot of press coverage. And I think that, you know, we need to realize that right now Indiana is being looked at. There are 30 other states that have provided accommodations with examples, you know, of things that can be done to help pregnant employees. And that's all we're looking for. So I don't know if my testimony brought in a whole lot of insight to people who seemed somewhat disinterested in even hearing it. But, you know, that's all we can do is show up and try to have our voices be heard.
Were you able to hear from any lawmakers? Did you talk to any of them personally to see what their thoughts were on this and maybe even just sharing your story with them?
I did. I spoke to a couple senators afterwards and they were gracious and they were kind and they were, you know, apologetic. But it's... I don't need an apology. I need the right vote. So it was, you know, it was very polite. And I appreciate that. And I, you know, I know that no one had to stop and share their condolences, but ultimately that's not what I'm after. I want good protection in place for women. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, I definitely want to talk more about this and maybe also how these laws are shaping in Indiana and in other states. We're talking about pregnant worker protections in Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soe. Back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soeb. We're discussing a new bill aimed at protecting pregnant workers in Indiana. And if you want to join in on the conversation, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana or leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. With us, we have Deborah Whitus, professor of law at the Indiana University Moorer School of Law, and Samantha Kern, one of the individuals who testified against House Bill 1309. Before we get back into the discussion, we're going to listen now to an interview I had yesterday with Andrew Berger. Andrew is senior vice president of governmental affairs for the Indiana Manufacturers Association. The group supported this current bill on pregnant workers, but doesn't want more regulations to come. We talked to him to find out why. This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. With us now is Andrew Berger, Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Indiana Manufacturers Association. Andrew, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you.
So you've come out in support of this particular bill, which would mean pregnant workers can ask employers for workplace accommodations in writing and without retaliation. But before we get into other potential changes around this issue, why are you in support of this one?
So the IMA and other business groups are supportive of this bill because it maintains what we call an interactive process where employers and their employees can come together to discuss, you know, what is a reasonable accommodation around this worker's pregnancy. And this is the process that's required under a combination of three federal laws, the Pregnancy Discrimination Act, the Americans with Disabilities Act, and the Family Medical Leave Act. And it keeps what could be a contentious process in a collaborative environment, which is what we want to maintain for our members and not have a conflict with the federal law. So, you know, and this bill does that. So which is why we're supportive of it.
And you mentioned some contentious issues. I'm a little curious, what could those look like if there was something that was sort of, I guess, contentious?
So it's around this, you know, what anybody's individual definition is of a reasonable accommodation. And, you know, that's deliberately not a term that's set in stone. It's open to interpretation. And because there are so many different interpretations, and we're not just talking about, you know, any individual, but any type of business, any type of job classification within those businesses, what's a reasonable accommodation is going to vary, maybe dramatically, for those specific circumstances. And that's why it's much better to have this type of collaborative or interactive process rather than, you know, a state statute or an enforcement body coming in on top of that discussion and frankly, making it more adversarial.
Well, what kinds of issues come up around these accommodation requests that this bill would address?
So I know that the author's intent and, you know, our intent is to make sure that in state statute and state law, that there should be no fear of retaliation around, you know, entering into that discussion. This bill is a little bit more detailed, and, you know, it says you can't be fired or terminated. You can't be retaliated against, but you can also not be disciplined. That's more specific than what the federal laws require. So it does take, I think, what some people would complain would be a small step, and I don't think it is. I wouldn't say it's a big step, but it's a step, you know, to give workers some additional protection in that, yes, you're allowed to enter into these discussions with your employer and to begin that process.
Now, last year, there was a bill filed that you opposed. What would that have done, that bill, and why were you opposed to it?
So not just last year, but other bills were filed this year, too, I think that are of the same thing. And what our biggest concerns with those pieces of legislation were that it set a list of accommodations that were presumed to be reasonable. And then it was up to the employer to basically make the case that they weren't, which is flipping it from what the law is now under the federal law, which, of course, does not go away. So you'd see this conflict between what the state would have and what the feds would have. And then the other thing that these bills have done in maybe different ways was to create a new enforcement mechanism. So you would have the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission at the federal level, the EEOC, but then you'd have either the Civil Rights Commission or the Department of Labor are probably the two vehicles of enforcement that were in these state laws. And so you'd have, you know, two different venues setting the rules and enforcing these statutes, which we didn't support either.
When people think about pregnant employees and asking for accommodations, they might say things like, well, pregnancy is a temporary condition. You know, it's 9-10 months that an employer would have to accommodate someone. What is wrong with asking for accommodations for just a temporary amount of time? Is there some kind of impact that it would have on employers depending on what is being asked of them?
there's nothing wrong with asking about it and talking about it and working with your employer. I mean, that is the law, and that's what this bill that we're in favor of would actually, you know, underline. Like I said earlier, you know, there's no set framework for what is a reasonable accommodation. It's going to vary based on the employee, based on the employer, based on the job. You know, from our members' perspective, where you have a lot of competition for quality workers, businesses are incentivized through the marketplace to, you know, retain good employees be able to be hiring good employees. And that includes, of course, female workers or workers, you know, that may become pregnant. So it's important that businesses have these processes, that they are, you know, able to be attractive to you know, potentially pregnant workers. You know, we're just really hesitant about a framework around which you must operate, or a list of accommodations that you have to give. And, you know, that's what this bill avoids. So that's why we're in favor of it.
There are some folks who oppose this bill because they don't think it does enough. Is there validity to their argument that pregnant workers in Indiana need guaranteed protections? Like, it's okay to have something in theory out there, but something more solid is what they're looking for.
I've certainly heard their objections. I don't think that the existing statute is really creating problems that have a lot of evidence behind them. I think overwhelmingly these accommodations are granted in businesses. You know, what I just said, it's important to attract and maintain and retain good workers that you have these as part of your benefit packages or on any individual case-by-case basis. So I think what we have under three different federal laws, and then again, the state law is actually getting the job done. You know, I think, and I'm probably better to let them speak for them, but their concerns about, you know, pregnancy issues or infant mortality rates, I mean, those are obviously very important issues for the state, but I haven't seen evidence linking those to the absence or presence of workplace accommodations, at least not on a broad basis.
What would the consequences be if further regulations are passed in the future? Would that have an impact on employers?
Well, we'd have to see how they would pair up with, you know, what we're obligated to do under the federal law currently. You know, I won't speak hypothetically. We'd have to see what would they come up with. But again, you know, our position is that the current interactive process serves both parties well.
All right. Well, I guess we'll just have to wait and see how things play out. And thank you so much for joining us today. We really appreciate your time. Andrew Berger, Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Indiana Manufacturers Association. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
And so we just heard this earlier interview that I had with Andrew Berger. Deborah, I want to know what your thoughts are. Were his arguments representative of what most people who don't want to see more regulations are saying when it comes to pregnant workers?
I think that they were representative. I don't think they're accurate. Just to be clear, there is no conflict that would be created between state law and federal law if we were to pass a law like 30 other states have done. It's working fine in those other states. What it does is clarify what's currently three or maybe four, depending on how you count, confusing federal laws that can sometimes apply and replace it with a single clear standard and make sure nobody falls between the cracks between those laws. Because also counter to what he said, we've heard from Samantha and we've heard from lots of other places, people, businesses do not always provide these kinds of support. And if a business is already providing this kind of support, then they're not going to be affected by passing a law that tells them to provide this kind of support. So for the businesses that are already doing it, it will make no difference. What it does is help workers who are at the businesses who are not doing it. And the other thing that is really, I think, disingenuous about what he said is the interactive process that exists for disability law exists because there's a requirement to provide accommodations. And that's what starts that conversation. if you don't have that clarity, then the conversation is often really short, like it was for Samantha. I need this help. And the employer just says, no. You get to the interactive process when you have a requirement to provide an accommodation. And then there's a reason for the employer and the employee to work together to figure out what works. So I think it's just very disingenuous to say that that wouldn't happen under this law. It does happen in other states. This is how you create the environment to have that interactive conversation and to protect employees so they feel safe having that conversation.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a listener voicemail from Esther who talks about how companies she's worked for have treated pregnant workers. Let's take a listen.
Hello, this is Esther from Hope. And where I've worked and what I've seen while I've worked is that jobs that can be done sitting down, employers, they don't even want to do that. They just want to keep people on their feet. And where I worked, it didn't matter if you were pregnant. And that you still had to lift the heavy boxes and all that. And if you couldn't do the job, then you were gone. And it was actually fellow employees that would help the pregnant people out because they knew the company wouldn't do anything. So it's a pretty sad state of affairs in a lot of businesses. Thank you.
And that was Esther. Samantha, I see you nodding your head to what she was saying. What was it about her statement that resonated with you?
I mean, I think there's just an overall sense of truth to her statement. You know, I mean, let me tell you how much I love hearing men talk about how pregnant women are treated in the workplace. It's so insightful. So, you know, it was nice to hear from someone like Esther who has, again, had that lived experience. And here we are as women saying, this is what I've gone through. This is what my coworkers have gone through. This is what my peers have gone through. My daughters, you know, we're all, I mean, even Representative Engelman herself, you know, spoke about her role in the workplace as a pregnant woman. And so it just, you know, when I listen to that, it's like, yeah, there's one more person who gets it. And surprise, it's a woman who's been pregnant.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so I guess what I'm wondering is, could this bill be, you know, we keep hearing this word stepping stone. Is it just something to get your foot in the door and then expand upon it? Deborah, do you see this as making some change? I know I've been hearing a lot that there's opposition to it, but what would that accomplish if you oppose it? And let's say it doesn't get passed.
I mean, I honestly don't think it really makes a change because women can already ask. You don't need permission to go ask your boss for an accommodation. And pregnancy discrimination is already illegal. So you already have a level of protection. To the extent this is more specific that you shouldn't face retaliation or discrimination or be fired for asking, it's a little unclear what your remedy is if that does happen to you, because this bill purposefully does not specify that there would be a remedy. So I really think this bill does not do anything to actually move the ball forward. I know it's well-intentioned. I respect Representative Engelman. She has tried to, you know, push stronger bills in the past, but I just think the right answer is let this one go and come back and build on the coalition that's been built over the past years, pushing for a real standard that actually requires accommodations. Like, I just think that's the better first step. I don't think this really advances the process.
Mm-hmm. And Samantha, have you heard from others who are also opposing this bill, other women who want to see better rights for pregnant women? Or are some on board with it?
So far, my experience has been that the opinions have aligned with my own. You know, I mean, where are we in 2021 where we're making a law that says women are allowed to ask for an accommodation? I mean, it's almost embarrassing that's the basis of what Representative Engelman is bringing forward with this bill, is just that we're allowed to ask. And that's as far as it goes. I mean, I can speak for myself. I wasn't afraid to ask for help. Absolutely. I was not afraid. I know plenty of people who are not afraid to ask for help. But if that's all we're being given, and there's no protection in place to get an outcome that, you know, is protective and healthy for us, who cares that I can ask for help? That's, it falls short, to say the least. You know, I mean, if you take someone in the workplace, you know, for instance, a 50-year-old man who is having chest pain, we don't know if his chest pain is a heart attack. We don't know if it's indigestion. We don't know what it is. But when you take someone and they're presenting to you this, you know, medical incident that is happening to them in real time, you know, I would venture to say that that person is escorted, you know, via ambulance to an emergency room. So at what point does a medical incident that happens within pregnancy become just as valid as a medical incident that happens for anyone else?
And so, Deborah, what is the next step in terms of coming up with a bill that would tackle all of these issues in one? What's the ideal scenario as we get ready to wrap up here?
Well, it's really simple, which is look at the model in Kentucky, look at the model in Tennessee, look at the model in any of the 30 states that have passed laws and passed them here. I will say the other answer is there is a federal bill pending that would do the same thing called the Pregnant Workers Fairness Act. It passed the U.S. House of Representatives last Congress. It didn't have time to be heard in the Senate, but I know advocates are working to pass it again in this current Congress that started in January. And so I think that's the other solution, is just have a clear federal law.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us today. I really appreciate your time and sharing your stories with us. Deborah Whitus is a professor of law at the Indiana University Moorer School of Law, and Samantha Kern, one of the people who testified against House Bill 1309. Our producers are Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, and Tim Brooks. Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. You can listen to past episodes or even this one anywhere you get your podcasts. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.